Welcome to the Picture House podcast. So Picture House are distributing Happening, and as you know, we showed it as the film on International Women's Day, and I thought that was incredibly appropriate for so many reasons, but most notably for the fact that this is still a reality for so many women around the world whose lives and bodies are still presided over by male decision makers. So I wondered if that was one of the reasons for making the film, and can you talk me through your decision to adapt Annie Ernaux's book?
It's funny because when I started writing, everybody was telling me the opposite. Like, why are you making this movie now? Because you have the law in France on your side. There is medicalized abortion. And people who told me that were mostly people who were supposed to give me money to make the movie. And I said to them, I hope you're going to tell the same thing to the next director who wants to do a World War II movie, because it's over yet. But people, I had the feeling by the time, it was like 2-3 years ago, that it was not a nowadays matter. And then while the writing process and making the movie, things happen in Poland, you know, the law changed. And then on my way to Venice, I read about Texas, you know, Roe versus Wade being a matter again, you know. So I think that now everybody starts to realize that it unfortunately always true somewhere in the world. I mean, when I started writing, it was true in so many countries, and I knew it. I mean, I did science political studies, so I'm pretty aware about that. But I think that the mentality are slowly changing, and we are a bit more aware of what's going on, not only in our country, but also somewhere else in the world, you know.
So with things like the current attitude to abortion, and it's still very much a taboo subject, which I was quite interested to see when I came out of the film, how many people still didn't really want to talk about it or even say the word abortion, you know. And I just wonder, is it a sort of like happening, is it a kind of grenade to let's just discuss this at least?
I love the idea of the grenade. I mean, through the whole process, I told Anna Maria Bartolome, my actress, you're a soldier on your own war. So the grenade comes with it, I guess. It's very complicated to talk about it. And I realized it because I discovered Annie Ernaux's book. I'm a huge fan of her writing, but I discovered this precise book after having an abortion myself, medicalized, obviously. And a friend told me about the book because I wanted to read about it, about the topic, and she advised me to read Happening. I was surprised to realize that I grew up with the words illegal abortion, but I had no exact idea of what was the journey. And it was not only about abortion, but about the sexual desire, about sexual freedom, about intellectual freedom, about being free to go from one social class to another one when you're a woman also. So there were many things that I had in mind related to freedom. But the word abortion is never mentioned in the book. And I wanted it to be the same in the movie. And I must say that on my way to Venice, as hitting the press conference, I was still wondering where I would say when I had an abortion. And it's strange because I worked 3 years against silence, and I suddenly realized that it's still, that silence is still working on me.
Yes.
I'm still asking myself the question where as I should say it or not, because silence is the main weapon of this social shame that is used to keep women not asking for their own rights and freedom.
Absolutely. I do, but personally, I believe abortion is not about abortion. It's about misogyny. It's about absolute control of women and their bodies.
But it's very interesting because I really enjoy talking with so many men throughout the whole journey of the movie. And we went in so many countries since Venice. And I had so many interesting talks. For instance, I talked with a man who said, while discovering your movie, I feel sorry because I'm a huge militant for freedom against Vietnam. I did that all my life. And I suddenly realized that I didn't fight for women's rights. And I think it's the same in the book. The men are not necessarily the bad guys. They just have literally no idea of what's going on in the woman's life at that precise moment. And it's shocking to realize that the law are met for not for men and women not to work together also, you know, for each side of gender to stay on its own side. And that's how you keep the power to yourself, you know.
Yes, and that is how the silence around it actually suppresses both men and women, isn't it? Because men don't know how they can support us, and we don't tell them, and because we can't talk about it.
Yeah, it's like, let's not have a discussion, you know.
Yeah.
So when you don't have words, you can't fight. That's something I really believe in. You need words to say what you go through out loud, and then be able to open a debate, even a hard one. But you have to shout something. And when you can't say anything, when it's in your throat, then you're done. Then it's an inner fight, and it's a more violent fight, and it's a fight for your life.
Yes, it's an incredible horror. And I thought that that is what you absolutely nailed, so that we can discuss this, was the unsayable, the emotional and physical isolation that Annie was in. You know, so can you tell, like, one of the things that Annie Arnaud said was that your film told the truth. So can you tell me about portraying that physical and emotional isolation that was beyond words?
I really wanted to make the movie be a physical experience, you know. When Yano tried to get the rightness of her memories, obviously it's fiction to me, so I can't do the same, but I told her from the very beginning that I would try to make the movie be that physical experience and reach the truth of the instant, minutes after minutes, you know. And to do so, I was thinking about the grammar of the movie, so the frame, and the way I would have all the crew work together in order not to watch her, but try to be her. Mm. And it means that it was kind of an orchestra, because, you know, she moves in a room. First of all, I don't cut that much. And we were always thinking about the exact length of each sequence, because if it's too short, it's theoretical. If I say, Anne is in pain, she can show it easily to the audience and they get the idea. But if we are able to keep that for a while, then you start feeling what she feels. But if you are too long, it's provocation. And the rightness, the exact idea is in between. And as I don't cut, we had to think about it carefully on set to find the exact tempo. A rhythm of the movie. And then, okay, let's be her. The Laurent Tanguy, my DP, moves with Anna Maria Bartolome, with the actress, as if he had become his shadow, her shadow. So they really find a way to dance together somehow. And then when she moves her head and look at something, the guy in charge of the focus must at the exact instant go and focus on that, on the thing she's looking at. And then we have to do so with the sound. So all the crew, and then there are the other actors come in and they appear on this special frame. So it was like an orchestra. We have to all work together to reach this one shot I will be able to keep. And it built something, us as a crew, that was really interesting.
Oh, I really enjoyed. Yes. Yes, I can imagine you must have been so in sync with each other. And I definitely felt that about the music and the sound design as well. They were all there to take us inside.
The story of the music is funny because I really, really wanted to work with the girl parents' brother, because I saw Loveless from Tekin Tief and I was obsessed with the score. And they have something that I really expected. They are not exactly making music. And I wanted something that would be more like obsessive sentence that she has in mind. Mm. And I knew they would be able to write those sentence and with notes. I called them and I didn't know them before shooting the movie. And they were sorry, but they were too busy. They couldn't. And then we have edited the movie with Géraldine Mangenot, my editor, and she knows them. And as I'm a bit stubborn, we used the Loveless score to edit the movie. And then she called them back and say she talked to Evgeny. And she said, hi, Evgeny. Actually, I edited the movie and we put your music. And it was like, oh, I hate when people use the music I've made for another movie to edit a new one. But she said, but maybe you should have a look, give an ear to the project, because we really do think your style and the movie would belong to each other, would work together. And he said, actually, I must admit that I agree. and they find a way to find time to work on it. And I was so pleased because they can even turn the music in something very physical. So I asked them to write the contractions. I don't know if it's the right word, but you know, when she felt something in her belly, I asked them to write with music physical sensations.
That's right. Yeah. Contractions. Yes. Yeah. What a great story. It's such simpatico, isn't it? Well, such a synchronicity, sorry. You can feel that.
But you know, on the set, I only work with friends. Most of the people of the crew are my close friends. And while making the movie, we had the feeling that something special was going on. But I'm also aware that sometimes you have these feelings and then you edit the movie and then nothing special happens. So we were pretty happy that we had that feeling that at the end we were happy with the movie.
Oh, and also, despite the subject matter, it is a beautiful film. The colour palette, the cinematography. One of my favourite scenes was the very simple scene of the girls on the bench. They fill the screen, their energy, their life force is titanic. They're all quite still, but they're golden. Can you tell me about capturing this wonderful female spirit and energy?
I wanted light in the movie, you know. She's going from light to darkness to find light, in order to find light again. So it was something, if you want to shadow things, if you want to make them, you know, we go from a world of young students feeling desire to the unknown, to this shadowing world where people whisper names that could help you. Like, you know, like in World War II, actually, you know, some people would help some people, but they're really rare, resistance, you know, and it's an obscure world and you don't know if people are going to turn you to the police or help you. And it's all I would say the thriller process comes from this darkness you're entering in. So we also talked a lot with Laurent Tangier about something I really wanted to share with the audience. At the very beginning, she's in the middle of the others. She's with other students trying to be included in that world. And as long as we go with her to the unknown, I asked Laurent to go in her back in order for us to be alone with her in that tiny frame. And so we could work with her step by step to the unknown. And when she pushes the door, we are her pushing the door, not knowing who's on the other side. Is it someone who's gonna help or is it someone who's gonna not help, you know, the opposite.
Yes, and it is. It's almost like a noir thriller in that respect, or let me say World War II. And Anna in herself is such a formidable character in some respects. You know, I love that there were so many things that I hadn't seen, like the way she slugs her coke at the bar. And so she is almost like a sort of world weary soldier that you describe. Can you elaborate on that?
It's strange because we were lucky of something we felt unlucky at the beginning, because the shooting was postponed because of the first lockdown. And Anna Maria and I worked through distance. We called each other every 2 days, I guess. And we exchanged references, books and films. And we talked about many different movies like Rosetta, Fish Tank from Andrea Arnold, or even Girl from Lucas Dont, Elephant, Soul of Sun. I mean, in order to make our own language. Mm. And I didn't have the feeling like it can happen from time to time, because we are always in a lack of time, you know. So sometimes the writer director knows the character very well, and the actor or actress jump on board at the last moment, and so we're not on the same level of how much we know the character. And as we had this time before, and we worked through distance, we also worked on body, you know. Where does she put her eyes? How much she always looked to an horizon she's the only one to see? How she's like, how are her feet on the ground, her shoulders, how determined is her? How much we can tell the story through the body, actually. And we knew when we arrived on set, we both knew the character, Anna-Maria and I. And that was, it changed my way of thinking about how to direct actors. Mm. And that's something I would love to have for the next movies, you know, try to make happen that time before where we can carefully think. So we are free to go when we are on set. And I must add that we never rehearsed the key scenes of the movie because I want to believe that you have to be at risk. And you have to go for it and pray for it to happen, this miracle, when you feel something that is close from true or sincere. And but we also were able to do so because we had this time before.
And also, there was the very graphic depiction. It was unexpurgated, and it's a hard watch in that respect. But I absolutely 100% support that depiction. I just thought it was so vital and so important. Can you tell me about your decision to bring that graphically to the screen?
It was actually kind of an easy decision because my idea was try to be her. Mm. So when I was thinking about my camera and what to put it, I was trying to be in her mind. So what is, if I'm this young girl, I know there are things I don't want to see, but I'm still going to have a glimpse of it, you know? So it was a matter of how to embrace our way of looking at the world in a very honest way, you know? And if I look away, I don't think it's fair because I have my own experience as a young woman, and I can tell that there are things I will have to look at, even if I'm reluctant, so.
I completely agree. I think it would have been another way of letting her down had that not been looked at as squarely and as unjudgmentally as you did.
Come on, it's another kind of silence, you know.
Yeah.
When you don't put images, it's another way to make that silence still be silence.
Yes. And I want to talk about the specifics of actual cinema for a moment, watching a film like this in a cinema. So Claire Binns, who is our amazing managing director, she always says that cinema changes lives. And I think that one of the reasons for that is that you see your story on that screen, 12 foot high, you know, and that gives you the permission for whatever's happened to you to part of that acceptance or part of that discussion. I wonder what your feelings are on this.
I think it's, you know, it's life and bigger than life. And that's my experience, you know. It's your life with much more light on it and something that, you know, takes you from your seat to be in the screen, you know. And that's what changed my life, by the way, you know. I wanted to jump in, you know. Even when I don't want to, because I watch lots of very hardcore movies, but or difficult ones. But still, you know, the idea that we are going to have much more experience that one life can have, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, I've just went through an experience where men told me that they were in this young woman's body for an hour and a half. And I was like, how much in life you can have that kind of experience, that kind of POV on the world, you know, that changed your meaning, your mind. I think it's magic somehow.
It is, it is. Audrey Duane, thank you so much for spending this time with Picture House Podcast. I really, really hope so many men get to see this film.
Me too. Have a nice day.
And you. Cheerio.